Okay, so rolling through camp here. Just continuing to build each day a little bit further along on, where we've come from, building into situations, building on our different techniques, trying to get things a little more detailed as we progress. We'll be heading into a little bit of a game week preparation next week in a couple days, so by Monday. Trying to move along in the things that we're doing, and pretty soon we're going to have to kind of turn the page in a little bit of a different phase of training camp, kind of a combination of our fundamentals, our skills, and game preparation. So we're trying to take advantage of every opportunity here. We got a lot of a lot going in, a lot of things to cover, but I feel like we're making progress, but we got a long way to go.
You mentioned the shift into game preparation. How much of a percentage? I mean, is it like 10% of a normal game week, 20% of a normal game week in the regular season? I mean, how much do you try to carry over from this week until September?
From this week till September?
How much of the practice of the installation or whatever you're doing to prepare for the Packers would you normally do if you were preparing for the Steelers?
Well, I'd say definitely less than half. So.
Can you just get into the particulars of the things that you kind of want to instill upon the team?
Well, we're obviously going to run, we're playing a lot of people, so it would be ridiculous to have three game plans. Actually, we have one game plan that would run into maybe two or three different groups. So by the time you split a game up into thirds, the amount of plays that you need are, a lot less when you're talking about a third of a game compared to a full game. So that cuts it down quite a bit right there. We want to work on the things that we've been working on. It's not really about game planning Green Bay as much as it is just having a familiarity generally with what they do so that we can go out there and have a chance to execute it. I mean, we don't want to, go in there blind. At the same time, I'm sure they'll do some things that we're not going to have prepared for. And that's part of football, too, is be able to make those adjustments during the game. But I'd say definitely well less than half of what we would normally do.
You did a lot of work for Hooman at yesterday's practice. What are some of the things that make him so valuable to your offense?
Mike's been really dependable for us, been very consistent. He's very smart. He's able to handle a lot of different assignments, depending on who the other tight ends are, depending on what we want him to do. He's a pretty versatile player, and he's been durable and dependable through the years for us. So he's played a lot of football in a lot of different situations, some contributions in the kicking game, and he's been a first, second, and third down player offensively, depending on what we've needed or what the circumstances have been. But he's played on all three downs and to some degree on fourth down. So he's got a lot of versatility, and he's a smart guy. He does make adjustments quickly and understands what's going on. So if we need to change or adapt or, make some type of adjustment, he's good at that. And at the tight end position, which is really where a lot of learning has to take place. A lot of formationing is done by the tight end, and therefore their assignments are based on a lot of different things, defensive ends, linebackers, safeties. There's really a lot for them to recognize at that position that fluctuates quite a bit. So he does a good job with all that too. But that's mentally, it's a hard position to play because of the amount, the volume, and then also the variables that come into play.
So when you watch a guy like Man or even when rookies come in here, how much of it do you say, well, maybe I think he can do that for us when he gets here, as opposed to when he actually gets here, and then you start giving him more and more because of what you see with your own eyes?
I'd say it's pretty true of every position. Like, we have a basic, set of criteria. This is what the player needs to be able to do. Some guys can handle that. Some guys handle a little less than that. Some guys handle a little more than that. I don't think you really know for sure how that's going to go until you actually get them here and get them in it. You might have an idea, but I'd say we've all misjudged that one way or the other before. So let's do the best you can. But, as they can handle more, then you give them more. Once you kind of reach the cap, then probably need to stop it there at least for a while until that gets solidified, and then maybe you can build on it.
A while back you talked about a progression from rookie to second year. About Dominique and Malcolm, how have they looked in terms of what you, along the same lines, how much you want to...
I think all, you know, all of those, all of the players that we had last year going into their second year now, you know, have made, you know, strong jumps in different areas. Could be physically, could be from an experience or understanding level, technique. So all those, yeah. Those two, you know, Malcolm and Dominique certainly have, but I'd really say they all have, and they all need to. It's a great opportunity for them to take a year of experience in the NFL, a shortened version of it by the time they actually get here in May, and take that year of experience and then have that as a base to build on year two, which they obviously don't have the first year, so that's a huge advantage. There's a lot more physical training that they can do, and they're at least further ahead in the mental game, and they also know what to expect. So there's that, say, a little bit less anxiety of the unknown. So all those things work in favor of the second-year player, and they need to be able to take advantage of them. I think our guys have. But there's always more that they can do, too. So
how much growth have you seen from Silver Slinger over the past couple of years?
Well, again, I think the majority of his growth came, you know, for us. And after his first year, you know, he came in mid-season or maybe a little before mid-season. And then, you know, the following year was really where, which actually was last year then, you know, where he made the biggest jump. Unfortunately, he missed, you know, a chunk of time last year during the middle part of the year, or the beginning part, actually, to the middle part. But... you know, he certainly has a good, and he's another guy that works hard. He's smart. He does a good job of knowing, you know, what he's supposed to do and how to do it. So the more time he can get out on the field actually doing it without having any setbacks, then the better he's going to be and the better he's been. So works hard, you know, and for a big guy, he moves well, and he's pretty athletic for his size.
Sort of building off Dan's question about when you think about a player and then you get him, you know, how it might change expectations. Jabal Sheard, I'm curious what you've learned about him, you know, from having him through the spring to the 19-8 practices in camp that maybe you didn't know.
You know, I don't think there's been, you know, a huge amount of surprises with him. You know, he's been in the league for 4 years. Mike was in Cleveland with him, so, you know, a pretty good insight there. I would just say the system that he was in there, we actually played a couple different systems there, and our system is a little bit different, so there's been an adjustment for him there with, you know, some of our techniques or assignments. But, you know, overall, I mean, a lot of things that we do, he's done. And so there's been a little bit of an adjustment, but he's done well with that. I mean, it's, you know, a good player. He's long, you know, has good playing strength, pretty instinctive. And, you know, he's played on the end of the line for his whole career, going back to Pitt, and in the NFL, and now with us, and that's pretty much where he's going to play for us.
Reflecting back to that draft when he came out in 11, you guys were right in that spot, right around where he ended up going. And I'm just curious, looking back, how close were you to possibly putting his name on that card?
I don't know. I mean, it's... it was certainly in the conversation there, but I don't know.
I'm wondering what kind of characteristics you look for from a player who's moving from guard to center.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of similarities between those two positions, with obviously the big difference being the ball, and that is a big difference. But, you know, they're both interior positions. Sometimes there's a center bubble, sometimes there's a guard bubble, sometimes the center's covered, sometimes the guard's covered. So whichever one you play, you're dealing with similar. It's similar. And you're working with that other player. There's a lot of combination blocks between the center and the guard. So, again, it's there's a lot of carryover there. The ball's a big difference, and the exchange and the cadence and all that. So I'd say, you know, physically the characteristics are similar. Technique-wise and assignment-wise, there's a little bit of difference. And then the whole guard issue is, you know, left guard to right guard, which we've talked about. For some players, that's easy. For other players, not so easy. And, of course, center to guard is the same kind of thing. Some players, you know, see those positions as side-by-side, and it's pretty seamless with other players. There's a big difference for them, and they have, you know, have difficulty making that switch from one spot to the other, regardless of which way it goes. But I'd say physically, there are a lot of similar characteristics. Now, again, it depends on what type of offense you're running. There are some offenses, particularly the, you know, I'd say the zone schemes, where there's a lot of similarities between guard and tackle. So, you know, where you're not pulling guards, you're zone blocking, so you don't have a lot of necessarily lateral movement by those guys, or, you know, pulling or screens or, you know, plays where they're getting out and running. And it's more of a zone blocking scheme or, you know, a pass protection scheme. So we have probably a little more multiple assignments for those positions than maybe some teams do. Again, I'd say, you know, looking at the zone teams, there's sometimes more carryover between guard and tackle than there is center and guard. But for us, we're probably a little more center guard. Finding our guard tackle combo is less frequent or maybe less likely in our system.
Coach, this isn't a medical update question, but is your but as you're preparing a whole team for the season, how do you also stay sensitive with wearing veteran players when you're coming off of a season that ended late and some of them maybe not having this full time to rehab?
Yeah, I mean, that's really been a big challenge for us over the last 15 years. I mean, it's a good problem to have. Obviously, you want to play long into the season, but it definitely shortens the time period for the players to recover and be ready for the next year, particularly the ones that have more significant injuries, you know, surgeries, depending on what the surgery is, but some type of, you know, ligament repair type surgeries, those things sometimes take a little bit longer, and our time frame there is a lot of times a month to 6 weeks less than where some other teams are. Then that affects us on this end of it, at the particularly in the training camp period. You know, usually most of those players are ready by September, generally speaking. This is a general question. We're not talking about any players particularly. But the end of July start versus early September start, the kind of 6 week gap there, is a lot of times the difference between players being ready in September versus ready in August. The problem is in September they may not be in the full training period that a player who's healthy is coming into training camp. So it's definitely something that we've had to deal with through the years, and particularly a year like this where you, you know, a lot of players after the length of the season and, you know, what happened at the end of the season with, you know, some postseason activities and parades and, you know, this and that. And sometimes it gets, you know, pushed another week, 10 days, 2 weeks back, which just, you know, comes up here on the other end. So timing and, you know, the ability to get some of those things taken care of at the end of the season isn't always optimal for us, you know, relative to some other teams in the league. So it's definitely a challenge. Fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, we've had a lot of experience with it, and we've, you know, learned to work in that time frame and trying to, you know, bring players back at the right pace for each individual player, depending on what his situation is, to try to have them ready and prepared physically, mentally, and from a competitive standpoint, you know, in terms of reps and you know, on the field experience, so we're not just throwing a guy in there cold. You know, we talk a lot about having to manage that situation. So it's a bad problem, but it's actually a good problem to have. So, but an excellent question, and something that's, I think, very a big part of how we have to look at the first, I'd say, you know, 4 to 10 weeks of the season. Training camp, early part of September, end October, you know, there are a lot of situations that kind of fall under that umbrella somewhere along the line. And obviously this year, you know, whatever it is, 9 players on PUP, and, you know, we're into the second week of August, so we still have a number of guys that we're dealing with, and some guys who are practicing who are not, you know, have been fully cleared to practice or not 100% yet, so.
Bill, can you say, Dean Dougherty in camp today, how would you sum up him as a player and your dealings with him?
You know, the one word I've always used with Junior is passion. And, you know, of all the players I've coached, his passion for the game, in every sense of it, was exceptional. In the building, in the classroom, on the practice field, around his teammates, in the games, on the sideline, whatever it was, that was, I'd say, the one thing about Junior that was always exceptional, relative to other players. I mean, forget about ability and all that, but just as a playing style, his passion, truly passion for the game of football. And, you know, Junior and I personally had a great relationship, and, you know, he was on this team for different parts of, you know, 4 seasons, and you know, he was always a very honest, upfront, team-oriented player, and you know, he brought a lot to this team, this organization. I think all of us that interacted with him while he was here feel privileged to have had the opportunity to play with or coach Junior. He was pretty special. Aside from all the accolades that he rightly deserves for his playing ability and production, I'm talking about really all the other things. So, well-deserved, and we're very proud of his recognition, and I've expressed that to his family and, you know, on behalf of the organization. So we were fortunate to have had the opportunity to work with him. Okay. You know, Chris is getting better. He's getting better. It's like all rookies. They got a lot to learn. They got to take advantage of their opportunities. And, you know, he's gotten a few more last few days, but a couple of players out, so that's what they have to do. They have to be ready for those opportunities and take advantage of them when they come. And Chris has also shown some ability to catch punts, return kicks, so when he gets those opportunities in the games, we'll have to, you know, see what he can do with them, just like evaluating all the rest of the rookies when they get their opportunities. He's worked hard. He's done a good job for us, and we'll see how it goes. All right, thanks.